This is the Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. We're on location with Deanna Nikaido, and she is a poet, she's an educator, she's an artist. And first of all, she's going to read a poem. Here's Deanna.
Thank you, Grace. It's lovely to be here. Voice like water. Voice like water is a mysterious capacity held from birth by thin-skinned buckets, 70% ocean. Fusing with our breath, it filters through the body's pages, out beyond its ledge. At times, we watch it from behind windows, condensed along the horizon. We, as wells, both human and eternal, are immeasurably composed of what we cannot seem to hold, delighted and confused by the endless reflections it gives back. The alchemy of its weather, left and right of heart. Its bell-like peal, its collapsed roar. We make room inside ourselves, wait for its mercurial rise and carry above the levee of our tongues. This voice, the one we drink and drown inside of.
Deanna Nikaido, did you say above the levee of our voice? What is that line?
Above the levee of our tongues.
Of our tongues. The thing I've always loved, and I've watched you from a distance ever since you were much younger, is your spiritual beauty in your poems without being vague. You have the imagery and the lyricism, but it is really so spiritual. And I did read that you're influenced by Rumi. And do you feel that has a thumbprint on your work?
Absolutely.
Who was this poet, Rumi?
He was a 13th century poet, mystic. And I remember the day that I discovered him sitting on the floor of Borders Bookstore. And I opened the book and I read the first poem. And I said, this is the poet that says what I haven't been able to put into words.
How old were you?
I was probably in my, 30s.
And so you had been writing before that, and you were always spiritual. So he was just the trigger, really, for something that was already in you. And this is something we need. We need to make poetry beautiful. And what is more beautiful than spirit? Tell us just a little bit about what you like about Rumi so people can look him up.
I think what really resonates with me is, and he has the ability to talk about that thread, that connection that holds everything together. And that seems to be what I think speaks to me and what seems to come up in my work as well. It's like it's talking to me and trying to get my attention. And I feel like that's what drew me to him.
That is so beautiful. In all of my years talking to poets, I never heard that description of their work. The thread that pulls everything together. That's what poetry is. Well, let us hear two of your own so we can feel this, see this for ourselves, and try to get the threads that connect you. This is Deanna Nikaido, and she's the author of two books, which we'll talk about after we hear her read.
This next poem was written for my son when he was going through a difficult time in his life. It's untitled. I cried the season the ball that never left your hand passed, taking the whole sky with it. If I had known you would lose your way like this, I would have blinded you myself, taught you Braille, called back Magellan, I would have replaced those insufficient words with rose petals to ease your marathons of restlessness. I would have told you stories of sailors and seas, their ships and rocks, not fairy tales, because inside the boy, my gestation walks alone among unreturned messages and body cravings I have no umbilical cord for. Tell me, are you far from here? Do you remember how you once rocked? Breathed that small ocean. How you floated perfectly beneath my ribs, so close to my heart. Do you remember those days of enlightened limbo? Your name before it slipped into letters.
Oh. Let's hear another.
This next poem is was written for my granddaughter, who, when she was 3 months old, did this crazy thing that none of us could believe. And so the poem is called Houdini. Every night, my three-month-old granddaughter finds her way out of her sleeper, tucking in her arms, inching up through the cotton cocoon, past zipper and snap, birthing herself out through the neck. No doubt she is a magician, with her fiery hair and ocean eyes, content to sit by day beneath the night of the cowboy hat her brother crowns her with as he gallops around the living room prairie. She is trying to tell me what I used to know before the world renamed it all. She is trying to show me how to shed what doesn't fit. The work that gets done when no one's looking, even if it takes all night.
I think that is my favorite poem from you. Fiery hair, ocean eyes. Oh, how to escape what does not fit, even if it takes all night. Only a poet would say that. That is such a... Now look, everything is subject for a poem. Who would have thought that a baby squirming out of her nightie would become a majestic poem that would live longer than any of your other works? Oh, that is truly my favorite. You had two books, and one is Voice Like Water. Did we hear the title poem originally?
You did. The very first poem, Voice Like Water, is the title poem.
And Vibrating with Silence, which is really your MO, I think. You take words and they do vibrate with silence. So I have watched you for ever since you were very young and heard you read. What do you think you're saying in these books and in all of your life? What is the story you're saying, telling over and over? What is the theme in your canon?
It's interesting because I started writing when I was 14. And poetry has always come to me the same way. I write during meditation with a notebook and a pen. I don't have any pre-thought about writing. It's just like I turn my attention, and if I lean in just the right way, I can hear what I'm supposed to hear, and I just write it down. So I'm really bad at workshops and prompts because that's not the way I write. And I think it's for me, it's really about listening until I can hear, about presence and connection.
Oh, no better description. So during the day, are you able to be present where the future and the past come together? Do you believe that you're mindful all day or just when you meditate?
I can be mindful during the daytime. You know, I do really value attention. You know, it comes and goes, though, for sure, like all of us.
Yeah, the day is an intruder for sure. But the fact that you give such a sense of quiet, safety, and calm with your work. Well, I don't believe it originates in the brain. I don't think the brain is smart enough to do this, to create this. I think it can orchestrate it, but I don't think it can create it.
I agree.
So you can't really say a theme because you're talking about spirit.
Right, because I don't sit down with an intention to write a poem necessarily.
Have you written, when you wrote your book about how to write a poem, do you include this or do you give more material examples, which we'll talk about later? But do you talk about spirit?
I think so, on a very simplified level, so that a child can kind of grasp it, although they write that way anyway. I think we outthink ourselves and try to write a poem where they don't have that. They don't have that barrier to cut through.
Good point. Let's hear some more of Deanna Nakaido.
So this next poem is from that first book, Vibrating with Silence. And it was inspired by an interview I heard on the radio by a group named Zero Church. And the song was called Sounds. And it was inspired by an interview with Matthew Shepard's mother at the time of his death. And so I just, the notion was that once a sound is made, you can't call it back. You can't change it. It continues forever and ever out into the universe. And that really kind of sat with me. How far does the sound of one bird's open-ended warble reach? If nothing is solid and the air is filled with continuing, if every cell is a tilted domino leaning into the next, then I am the last word of your conversation and the beginning of your next. If memory were long enough to fill this presence, if the same invisible verb that whispers bloom to the rose and dawn to my eyes were a noun I could touch, if this ink from my pen is the breath of a child in his mother's love, then language is feeling. And words are hollow cups, poured and pouring. And this invisible fear, the one that fits inside every separation, cannot cap this sky. Still, I count stars like breadcrumbs across every darkness, feeling the pressure of grace outgrowing limitation, my future already turning inside the heart of one who holds me close, the one whose name secretly frames forever, the one who balances the clock I break between sunrise and sunset. Every thread of distinction between you and I is a safety net. Undissolved sugar at the bottom of a drink we stir and stir like breath through sleep in a country the body has no geography for. This class moment slipping from outline, this full fragrant prayer exhaled in one night's glory, is a beheaded love carried everywhere the wind blows. How can we breathe this miracle and remain ordinary? Hold ourselves in a state of unscented captivity, drowned in the shallow end of questions we can't seem to touch the bottom of. Mm.
Deanna Nakaido, if ever anyone tried to explain the inexplicable, you do this. You really can talk about something that cannot be said. I want to hear another poem. As you reach for it, I want to interject a minute. You said you live in a world surrounded by trees. Do you believe your surrounding affects you, your presence, your furniture, your world. Where do you live? I know you live in Baltimore.
I am up above Baltimore County at the tip of
Okay.
County, so I'm surrounded by, trees and the gunpowder and all that.
I would like nothing less for you than the trees. Now let us go with that poem.
This next poem was written after my father passed, and interestingly enough, he was a patent attorney, so he was very right-brained and logical and not quick to show his emotions. But when he passed, he started coming to me in dreams, in these really interesting series of dreams. And he was saying things he never said to me, when we were together. They were very profound and spiritual. So this poem is one of the poems that came from that. And it's kind of from the notion of arcing. And I took the epigraph is from the definition of electrical arcing, which means a luminous bridge formed in a gap between two electrodes. Arcing with my father. When you motioned me to come to you, I thought you meant next to, as close as, because all of the information I'd ever had about the space between two objects was distance, not about how to erase it. And so the exercise is this. The flower over there is inside of me. The maple and all of its seasons is inside of me. The mountain with its heart split between sun and moon is inside of me. And my father, gone a year and one season, sitting younger in front of me in the white of this dream, is challenging the physics of my resistance. He knows I'm bad at math. He knows I love him. His arm is arcing between us. My father is inside of me.
That is my favorite poem. Now that is my favorite poem. Deanna, you teach us so much. How can people believe that there's no connection to the invisible? How can people think they're just three-dimensional little things walking around in the mud? How can people not access all that's available to them? I am so happy that you are an ambassador for the invisible. That's just what your poetry is. And do you have another father poem?
I have a father and mother poem.
We'll take it. We'll take anything we can get.
So this was written after my father passed. I lived with my mother for the first 4 months to help her. And so this is called Give Up Naming. I look at her now slightly in front of herself, the way a street lamp occupies more space than it's been given. And I wonder what little I know about radiance. Her cheeks a paler shade than the strawberries she eats, yet she outlives my father, who comes to me in dreams saying, come closer, give up naming and spill. Every time she lifts the spoon to her mouth, the stain of berries brightens her lips. And I wonder how close any of us are to saying nothing. How we will recognize each other when we do.
Are you writing new poetry?
Yes, I am working on another book currently.
Well, I cannot wait. I cannot wait. How many poems do you have so far?
I probably have a good bit, maybe probably 30-40, but I have to finish and edit some things.
Do you know the title of the book?
I think it's going to be called Enlightened Feet Everyday Shoes.
I'm on it. I'm the first person to buy one. I'll send you a check tomorrow. I love your stuff. Great. So much. You've done an incredibly important work for children. And I know you work with Kwame Alexander. What was the name of that book of animals?
Animal Ark.
Tell us about that book. You are co-author. Now there's three people involved. How does that work?
So we all live in different places. And so, we would exchange poems together and put it together that way. And it worked well.
So somebody gave a theme, or did you just offer one, or did you talk about it first, or you just all offered poems and then agreed upon them?
Well, what it was is the photographer for National Geo, Jill Satori, went around photographing endangered animals. And so he put together a tabletop book of 400 photographs, and they wanted a children's book. So they asked us, and so for each animal, we wrote haiku. It was haiku.
I'll get it. Yes. And this is National Geographic magazine? It's Geographic Publishing.
Correct.
Right. So it's a big deal.
It was.
And are you getting equal credit?
Yes, it's a beautiful book. Mary and I were the quieter authors in it. However, we all worked collaboratively.
Oh, this is, I didn't know it was about animals who were extinct.
It's beautiful. It's a really beautiful picture book.
And are the haiku something that children can attach to?
Oh, absolutely.
Well, I was going to ask you if you wrote haiku, because it's the purest form of poetry, and I thought it was just your cup of tea, and now I know where to find your haiku. How much in the book do you think you have? A third of the book? Your haiku. How many haiku are in your name?
Yes, there's no names. It's one book together. It's
so we don't know who wrote what?
Nope.
Oh, pure spirit. That's pure spirit. That's Zen for sure. And so there's more work that you've done, and that is working with literacy with
Correct.
Children. And what is that program?
So the program that we worked in, I guess back in 2007, we started, was called Book in a Day.
Oh, yes.
And we went into the high schools, and in a two-day program, we wrote poetry the first day with them, and then the second day we turned them into a publishing house and divided them up into marketing and copy editing and editorial, and they put a book together of their own work, and then we took it back and published it for them and brought it back, and they had a book signing and a book reading. It was a wonderful program. It started off in the high schools, then it went to middle school and even elementary.
Good work in the world. Good work in the world. And you also have, I know, been a coach for the state of Maryland for its Poetry Out Loud. So that you've been in the community as well as in yourself.
Correct.
Two good places to be. Let's have another poem.
So this poem was written for my grandson, who my grandkids are also a huge, inspiration for me. This is called It Could All Be That Easy. It's written all over his face, and hiding isn't something he's learned yet, thankfully. I hope I get back to that before he catches up to me, because what would it look like if everyone went out of their way to tell you that the yellow magic marker on the living room rug is covered by a paper towel so you wouldn't be mad? All I want to do is solve this with a hug. The rest can all be worked out. Who wouldn't want to walk into this? Who wouldn't want to throw away the keys?
That yellow mark on the rug is subject for a poem. Everything is holy, isn't it?
It is.
Everything is holy. So keep going, because we're really levitating with you.
The work of Closer. There is no rug in nature to be pulled out from under. Everything dies happily and a day ago. No eulogy for the cracked seed leaving his body to become the tree that's cut and split for a polished man to sit on, or simply tinder for light. And who are we really? And by what name would we recognize ourselves when the fire is done with us? When the education of silence in its unpronounceable proportions simply gives itself away. Perhaps we too would be more willing if we could marry ourselves to the saying of it. Forget the details of what mattered less. Repeat sky like a bird does with its wings, the way a drop of rain immerses itself in anything that thirsts. Live like the bee whose heart happens around every flower it loves.
Well, you better be read more than Mary Oliver, because I believe you ramify in a way that no one does. And I'm really looking forward to that new book. Have we heard anything from the book, or are these all published poems today?
No, a good bit of these are new poems that will
Wow. Be. So we have a premiere.
You have a premiere.
It's good. It's good to have a premiere. And I'm going to be following your meteoric rise, because it is way overdue that we've had this conversation. And I really thought that we were on the air once a long time ago, but it could have been that I just saw you at a reading. You were more public. Years ago, you were more in the public, I think.
Very much so.
Yeah. And were you raised in the Buddhist tradition?
No, I wasn't.
And so you just came to serenity on your own?
I've definitely followed, you know, a meditative path for quite a few years.
Well, I am, just since my husband died, I did join a sangha, and I find it very restorative, as I find your work. So please let us have a closing poem.
Every leaf, while on its tree, sways in unison, bears the same light and shadow, is sustained by the same sap that will release it in blazing color. It is that moment before falling we all live for, to see ourselves for the first time, to hear our name being called from the inside.
The voice of Deanna Nikaido. I am very moved by what I've heard. And the program is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. The program is produced by Forest Woods Media Production. Post-production by Mike Turpin, MET Studios. We wish to thank the Library of Congress for making the program possible. Funding is provided by the Maryland State Arts Council, by the Rivada Fund, by Natalie Canavore, the Sinipet Fund, and Sandy Jackson Cohen. Mike Turpin's our engineer, and I'm Grace Cavalieri.